Human EM Targets. Harlan E. Gerard, one of the most level-headed researchers into the lore of mind control, has, himself, been an EM target for years. He doesn't like to talk about his personal experiences because he'd rather let others tell their stories, but he admits he still has handlers and hears disembodied voices. Like so many of the other so-called wavies, Gerard is no wild-eyed maniac. He is distinguished, affluent, and quietly articulate. The brief abstract printed below sets the overview for this chapter and others a look at the high quality of the human beings reported this EM target phenomenon. I'll introduce Gerard to you the way I met him, through his paper, Offensive Microwave Weapons, Develops in This Technology of Political Control. Quote, the Central Intelligence Agency has developed a technology which can make the blind see, the deaf hear, and the lame walk. It will never be used this way because the technology is central to the domestic policy and foreign ambitions of the United States government. Whether that government is nominally headed by George Herbert Walker Bush, William Jefferson Clinton, or any other possible successor. The effects of these microwave weapons are many and varied, but the most insidious couple with the central nervous system to produce effects which might be described as satanic possession. Remote motor control of human locomotion and movement, including speech, has become possible. Remote motor control can be used to murder by suicide, quote, accident, suffocation, asphyxiation, and heart attack, or to simply neutralize the victim by making his words come out of his or her mouth, which he or she said had no intention of speaking. In order to evade responsibility for the detonation, torture, rape, and murder of many tens of thousands of human beings, the CIA has developed, in conjunction with the NASA Ames Laboratory, which is called, generically, a telepresence surveillance system. This system gives the torturers employed by CIA a sense that they're in the room with the victim. In other words, the victim can be made to feel, and does feel, as if he/she is in prison, but the victim remains in his or home house. Consequently, the situation is created in which the victim appears to be free to uninformed third parties, but at the same time is incarcerated as securely as if he or she had been confined to a maximum security prison. In this manner, human beings can be and are being sadistically tortured in the privacy of their own homes. The bizarre objective of this treatment is to mentally and physically torture the victim until his or her own personality collapses and he or she becomes something lower than a slave. In science fiction, this computer-driven human being is called a cyborg. At the present time, approximately 300 Americans and other nationalities are being clandestinely detained and tortured. Some of them, the funding comes from the behavioral neuroscience research authorized by Congress and decade of brain legislation. As with every other interest of the United States government, the creation of cyborgs had been entered in with reckless enthusiasm, the crudest possible taste, and the immense amounts of money. The United States has brought the whole world to the brink of a disaster which is almost beyond human comprehension. A good example of something standing at this brink is Glenn Nichols, 47, of Grover Beach, California. Once a psychotherapist and family counselor, Nichols' patients were engineers, scientists, and executives employed by such companies as Rockwell International, Lockheed Corporation, Rand Corporation, Litton Data Command, Motorola, Rocketdyne, Honeywell Computers, Rockwell Science Center, Lockheed, Informatics Corporation, Grumman Corporations, Whitaker Corporations, Hughes Aircraft, Teledyne Corporation, U.S. Navy, U.S. Air Force, U.S. Army, Digital Equipment Corporation, Language Technology, Image Sciences, Tandem Computers, Talos Corporation, Jet Propulsion Lab, Boeing Aircraft, Electrical Engineering Software, Wankdank Data Products, GTE, Radian Corporation, ATE Associates, RCA, Exxon, IBM, Northrop, NASA, Chevron, CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, Paramount Pictures, Universal Pictures, Lucasfilms, Disney Corporation, Aaron Spelling, Stephen Bochco, Walmart, and others. Nichols told me he'd been a victim of mind control for almost his adult life, yet it was only a few years ago he said he awakened to that fact. Like Gerard and O and Lois, he too uses the word slave when speaking about his condition. Here follows an excerpt from letters he wrote over the 30 months of 1994. I'm a victim of mind control. I've been mind controlled for my entire life. I've been mind controlled with the typical methods of behavior modification, hypnosis, drugs, electroshock, torture, and lies. I believe that most people who understand the methods of the secret societies would call me a slave. I can recall the perpetrators using the above methods on me when I was younger than 3 years old. As many know, the methods cause amnesia for the conditioning and psychological disassociation of the reality that the person is a slave to. Over the years, the above methods were frequently used on me, at times daily. Sometimes I would realize their circumstances because some good people would awaken me and explain what was being done to me. When I would begin to realize what was being done to me, their perpetrators would find me and intensify their efforts. They often used torture, ether, memory-blocking drugs, and electric shock to my head to erase my memories. This would cause me to forget what the good citizens told me. Apparently, the above very strong methods of mind control were not enough for the perpetrators. I now remember that when I was about 12 years old in 1959, the evil people inserted a temporary radar receiver in my ear. I was told that I had a hearing problem and I had to wear a hearing aid. Apparently, some people around me objected, and they stopped that tactic for a short time. When I was about 15 years old in 1962, they had miniaturized radio receivers sufficiently that they could insert one in my ear canal without me realizing what they had done. Then they would use very low volume subliminal messages to control me. They would give me post-hypnotic suggestions that I had ear infections and I must not clean inside my ear canals or I would suffer permanent hearing loss. Occasionally, I would clean inside my ear canals and find a metal device that would be explained away by those around me. The realizations of devices in my ears were then always erased with torture, drugs, and electricity. The mind control efforts were very intense. I was oblivious to many events around me, and certainly to the reality I was being completely controlled. I had thousands of days and experiences simply erased from my memory by their techniques. Occasionally, with some people's help, I would briefly break free from their control. This would enrage them. When I was about 20 years old in 1967, they surgically implanted a miniature radio receiver and transmitter behind my right ear canal and next to my eardrum. I was told I had hurt my head and ear playing football. Over the next 20 years, the receiver transmitter was replaced a couple of times and another one was implanted behind the other car and the other ear. I have several very fine scars above both places. Apparently, the perpetrators not only would broadcast subliminal commands to me, but they had the ability to listen to my conversations and to electronically track me and locate me. For some reason, in addition to the surgically implanted radio receiver transmitters, at times additional miniature receivers were also inserted into my ear canals. I can recall having one found in my ear by a California State University Northridge Health Center medical director and doctor in 1971. I also found another in my ear in about 1988. Of course, they would immediately erase my memory of what I had found. I assume there had been other times that I had found, but not recalled. Why would there be miniature receivers in my ear canals in addition to the surgically implanted ones behind my ear canals? I can only guess. There have been many other devices. I can recall having an electrode inserted into my frontal brain through my nostril when I was about 33 in 1980. I experienced intense pain, confusion, sand disc equilibrium. I was told I had a sinus infection. I explored the source of my pain and found a small bulb stuck to the roof of my nasal cavity. The doctors I contacted said it was an infection and not to touch it. I persisted and removed it myself with tweezers. It looked like a two-pronged electrode with two sharp wires stuck up into my brain with a bulb hanging down. I took it to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and they told me it was a transistor that had probably fallen out of an automobile. Then my memory of the event was erased for several years until recently. There are several other incidents for which I have only vague memories. When I was 42 years old, in 1989, I began to realize that something was very wrong. I had massive memory loss and some memories I could not explain. I gradually began to realize I was the victim of mind control. I began to recall thousands of conditioning sessions and abuses. I had not yet realized I was also the victim of surgical implantations. When I sought help from friends, family, and medical professionals, they all said I must be psychotic and that none of it happened. They said that there are no secret organizations, there is no such thing as mind control. That was all a delusion. I quickly learned that no one would talk about their abuses. I was threatened that if I talked about it, I would be committed to a mental institution for a very long time, or murdered. Of course, the threats are always indirect, so they can't be denied. My efforts at securing assistance from the FBI, police, lawyers, and medical professionals were responded to with a complete denial that such things happen. I'm anguished with the reality that over 42 years I've been a victim of mind control, torture, and slavery. Say I had not yet realized that I had surgical implants, I tried to continue on with my life. However, in June 1991, when I was 44 years old, they informed me that through the speakers that I presently had implanted in my skull, that the speakers were there, that I just simply increased the volume so I could hear them consciously. They also informed me that I have an electrophonograph, an EEG transmitter, implanted in my brain, and that they use biological, medical telemetry, and computers to read the EEG. They indicated that the EEG transmitter was implanted, perhaps in 1970, when I was just 23. I was then a student employed at an administrative aide at the Department of Defense Contracts Administration Services in Van Nuys, California. I was taken to several defense contractors' locations, Rockwell, Litton, and Lockheed, and shortly after, my memory would be erased. On one occasion, I was taken to the Lockheed Corporation in Burbank, California. I was asked to test a new pilot simulation chair, including the oxygen mask. I was then administered a general anesthetic and some type of cranial operation was performed, and then my memory of the events was erased until recently. A couple of years later, in about 1972, when I was 25, I was directed to hypnotherapy by Eric Marcus, MD, at the Gestalt Therapy Institute in Santa Monica. My memories of those sessions were also erased. After the realization of my implants in June 1991, and the perpetrators' around-the-clock torture of me, I contacted several medical doctors. All the doctors indicated that I must have nerve damage or psychiatric disorder, but what I was describing doesn't happen. In August 1991, I was given a magnetic resonance imaging. It is similar to an X-ray of my brain. The technician happened to mention that the images on the screen were not accurate. When I pursued a conversation, forgetting that I am constantly monitored, a man entered the West Hills Regional Medical Center MRI location and told me I had to leave. Of course, the doctor, Jeff London, MD, who ordered the MRI, said the results did not show anything. I know, and the perpetrators know, that a legitimate MRI or X-ray, radio frequency analysis, or surgery will prove the existence of their diabolical system. However, I also know that there are experts in eliminating evidence, and when they can't eliminate the evidence, they simply manage the public, media, and judicial system. While Nicholas insists that he has implants, Gerard and others think that unnecessary, unlikely. So, continuing with his story, Nichols tried to comply with what he called their code of silence, thinking that would bring him relief from the incessant harassment he was experiencing. In January 1992, while they were torturing me with their incessant broadcast, I decided to teach a community college psychology course on stress. I did everything to appear normal. I believed maybe I would receive some help if I did not seem to be witnessed against them. I also thought the normal appearance would counter their efforts to discredit me. It took all my effort to conduct the class, and somehow I completed the term. I have radio receiver transmitters implanted next to each of my eardrums, and an EEG transmitter planted into my brain. They have demonstrated quite conclusively they can read every one of my thoughts. This system is extremely fast and accurate. They inform me of their knowledge of my most intimate thoughts, auditory perceptions, and visual perceptions. The system is also very powerful. I have tried evading the radio signals by hiding in structures and traveling great distances. Unfortunately, they have always been able to receive data from the transmitters and have always heard their broadcasts. Nothing has been successful. They read every thought, make continual bizarre, distracting comments, give constant subliminal commands, and use high-pitched sounds against me at every moment. They use a combination of extremely demented, vulgar, heinous, and satanic ranting, then altered this with informing me of the details of thousands of days of experiences for which I have a complete amnesia. They would at times cause me to laugh, smile, and display a lighter mood while inside. I know they are creating an image for a situation I am actually extremely distressed. I know that they still have complete control over me, even though I am now aware of their system. They like to command me to do different behaviors. They taunt me with their toys and robots. They continually remind me that it's impossible to counter their subliminal commands. They call this process of torturing me icing. They have been controlling and torturing my life for the entire time. The perpetrators increased their subliminal broadcast to a conscious level and have been using the speaker and the EEG transmitter to torture me continually since June 1991. For over 2.5 years, they incessantly, viciously, and maniacally read my thoughts, make vulgar comments, give me atrocious subliminal commands, broadcast noxious sounds, and distort me at every moment. They even structure my dreams when I fall asleep from exhaustion. They have several times kept me awake for several days. I know I was very near death. They tell me they are the Illuminati, or Freemasons, or Brotherhood, or CIA, or NSA, or U.S. Naval Intelligence, or U.S. Army Intelligence, or U.S. Air Force Intelligence, or a particular corporation like Rockwell International, Lockheed Corporation, or Northrop, or Exxon. Probably each description contains some truth. I just think of them as the organization. For about 3 years, no one would even admit to me that any type of mind control existed. I concluded that their terrorism is so effective that no one even talks about it. Then, in August 1992, an anonymous person in a bookstore pointed me to a book called Breaking the Circle of Satanic and Ritual Abuse by Daniel Ryder. I cannot concentrate very well, so I only skimmed the book. It presented information about the marionette syndrome, or slavery, and other abuses. It described specifically some of the kind of mind control techniques it gave reference to, and other books on ritual abuse, and it listed some organizations that help people. In August 1992, I began contacting the above organizations. Most of the people with whom I spoke acknowledged them, that above atrocities are real, and that countless others have been victimized. However, each individual and organization presented some barrier to actually helping me beyond occasionally listening to my anguish. One organization said it sounds like the Illuminati or the Brotherhood is torturing me. They said they have helped several of their victims. They told me that they would send me some information and that I should call them back to make arrangements to travel to their location. When I called them again, they said they can help me others, but they just can't help me. The above basic scenario has happened on several occasions. It seems that my circumstances are just too controlled and dangerous, and that people are unable or too afraid to help me. I'm not optimistic. The organization here in America seems to have complete dominance of every individual and institution. They boast to me how they are the eye of the Illuminati, Freemasons, and the secret Greek society. They say they are a worldwide nation that governs the world. They tell me that no country or organization would dare defy them. They indicate that they are the government behind most governments. I know that they are masters of deceit and frequently use Trojan horses. They set up front organizations to portray that they are helping victims so that they can uncover any underground opposition. I hope that some people in organizations that seem to be generally helping people are real. I am very skeptical, though. For instance, I wonder about former intelligence officers based in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., that publish information about government abuses. Why does the Association of National Security Alumni publish an expose about microwave harassment and mind control experimentation when in reality it is not harassment or experimentation? They are actually diabolical torture and perfected mind control systems, respectively. Why do they emphasize the beginning of government electronic abuses in 1988 or 1989 when they should very well be abuses that existed for decades? You would think former intelligence officers would know these facts. Why do these emphasis microwaves and directed energy methods? Where are they complete thought reading and mind control systems using implanted devices, telemetry, and supercomputers? Why do they present circumstantial evidence with references to records, scars, inconclusive x-rays, and victim testimonies when there are victims that are known to them, and brain images, frequency analyzers, and surgeries to prove the existence of the devices beyond any doubt? Why is there no reference to the secret societies and fraternities like the Mafia, P2, and Freemasons? Why is there no mention of the prevalence of mind control slaves? I will continue to be skeptical and cautious. I know that all legal systems are usurped by the organization, and public laws and constitutions are circumvented. In another letter, Nichols said, quote, "My experience is that all my conscious and unconscious cognitions are detected. Complete conscious and subliminal control of me is exerted with the implanted speakers, electrodes, and brain transmitters. The perpetrators control me to travel to locations, take actions," Nichols told me in a phone conversation that includes assassination attempts, "speak words, use nonverbal sign language, and it is all precisely coordinated with their objectives. They can insert thoughts, elicit images in my mind, and they can describe in detail to me those thoughts and images. As well, they discuss with me in details of my dreams, their contents, and pictorial descriptions of the dreams after I awaken from sleeping. During my waking states, very minimal thoughts and visual and auditory perceptions that I have are discussed in detail by the perpetrators. As extraordinary as it may seem, the perpetrators have essentially 90 to 100% monitoring and control over me. They virtually have many people 24 hours a day broadcasting to me. They continuously broadcast demented, ranting, and noxious sounds. They will at times inform me of consultations or activities in which they direct me to be a participant, and then the events were erased from my memory. They also spend an enormous amount of time redundantly demonstrating to me how they can monitor and control my entire cognitive activity and behavior. I know that other methods of mind control can be used, such as extremely low frequency ELF radio waves, microwaves, lasers, infrasound, behavior modification, and hypnosis. However, the biotelemetry system creates completely monitored and controlled human robots. Personally, it is extremely terrorizing and completely dehumanizing. I have memories, and the perpetrators have debriefed me about thousands of heinous abuses of me and others, and activities they have devised. Unfortunately, they have also inserted much disinformation to my memory. I am certain that I have consulted with many government personnel, businessmen, entrepreneurs, and people in the entertainment industry. My incomplete and fragmented memories exclude and include improbable and extremely sensitive missions inside the USSR. For example, one mission I was directly involved was with a covert removal of a very high KGB official to the United States. Whether or not Nichols has electrodes implanted in his body has yet to be determined. He says that he has used meters to measure the frequencies of the transmission used against him, most of which are from 1 kHz to 30. He has written a number of researchers and psychologists telling him the same things he's told us. In a telephone conversation with him, when I expressed skepticism about what he has given in implants, he told me he didn't think it was me, because, he said, Boehr knows this is possible. Mr. Nichols deserves our help and attention, and at the moment, we have not located the people who will volunteer to. For starters, number one, take the x-rays of his skull which prove or disprove his claims of implants. Number two, the electronic wizards to somehow catch him unaware and measure the frequency and strength of the signals he says is perceiving. Number three, a deprogrammer willing to set him free from his classically conditioned states. Like so many survivors, Nichols is unemployed and without resources. And in the United States of America, there is little know-how in deprogramming and no mental health system that can provide the services he needs. On May 28, 1984, the Miami Herald carried a story by staff writer Al Mesericht, headlined, Drug Pilot Says He's Caught in a CIA Plot. The subtitle read, Implants Called Part of Plan to Control World. James Pettit, a convicted drug pilot, admits arms smuggler, has told the same story over and over again, and nobody believes him. Embedded in his neck, his ears, he says, are tiny electronic devices put there by the CIA to control his thoughts. A federal judge heard the tale and ordered a psychiatric examination. The psychiatrist said that Petit is legally competent. The judge ordered a CAT scan and a sophisticated x-ray of Petit's neck. The test found nothing. When a Dade Circuit judge heard the story, he thought Petit was trying to talk his way out of an arson charge. The judge ordered a new x-ray when Petit offered to accept a 30-year-old jail sentence if they turned up something. To the surprise of the judge, the prosecutor, and even Petit's attorney, the new test from Jackson Memorial Hospital showed two foreign objects in Petit's neck. Circuit Judge Howard Gross ordered the exploratory surgery to find out what they were. Thoughts that don't belong to me keep appearing, Petit said in an interview in Dade County Jail. The only problem is I'm having getting the implants exposed. Up until the newest x-rays, there was nothing to give credence to his story, said Petit's latest attorney, Rory Gelber. I feel that now there is some objective proof of what he is saying. It is the kind of tale that could become a bestseller, a spy thriller with drug smugglers, airplanes, crashing in flames, organized crime, murders, and mind control by the CIA. Sitting in a tiny interview room in the jail, Petit holds up one, then two x-rays. Each is about the size of a sheet of typing paper. See the circled areas, he says? See that thing that looks like a little bottle? That's my friend and an implant. They're not metal, they're quartz. They're like tiny radio receivers. I think they were going to use me in a plan to assassinate someone, Petit says. I can't prove the CIA put them in there, but there's no way any government agency has the power to do that. You think about it, I can't be the only one implanted. Physically, James Petit, 39, is a wreck. Burnham Petit is what federal drug agents called him because of the many planes he crashed in his brief career as a drug pilot. Petit's latest crash in April of 1982, a Lockheed Lodestar carrying quaaludes, was the worst. When the plane exploded in a Colombian pasture, Petit was burned over 50% of his body. 8 days later, he was admitted to the Burn Center of the U.S. Army Institute of Surgical Research at the Brooke Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas. Hospital spokesperson Ray Deary confirmed that Petit was treated by two doctors at the center until July 2, 1982. Petit said that while he was at the Burn Center, the implants were put in his neck, face, arms, and ears. The CIA program was called Operation Crystal Ball, Petit says, and he found top-secret documents on it in a Key West dumpster in the 1960s. They came from a safety deposit box which was broken into by the former Key West National Bank, he says. The documents described a CIA plan to take over the world's judicial and political systems by mind control by the year 2000, Petit says. The crystal balls routine, I'll never be able to prove, he says. His discovery of the documents is one reason CIA focused on him, Petit says. The other reason was his search to find out why his older brother, Herschel Neal Petit, died in the Gulf of New Mexico in 1978. Petit says his brother was a straight arrow. He couldn't believe his brother had committed suicide aboard a boat loaded with pot. I think he was working for CIA or the DEA, Petit says. I went to New Orleans. I talked to the organized crime family. Gave them a list of names. CIA, CIA, CIA. Don't fool with it, they told me. I put it all together in my head. Smuggling and CIA connected. James Petit is obsessed by thoughts that the CIA can control him. In a deposition, Petit has asked his ex-attorney in federal court, Kathy Hamilton, if she was working for the agency. No, she said, but the CIA had once offered her a job as she was graduating from college. Petit said Hamilton's fidgeting with her hair and cigarettes were triggering mechanisms to control his mind. In motions filed in court, the Herald Story reported Petit said it was important to note that the former attorney, assistant public defender James Webb, once showed up in a court wearing a Duke University ring. The year on the ring wasn't the year of Webb's graduation, a tip-off that Webb was working for a CIA, says Petit. I accused him of it. Webb says there's no such truth to the accusation. The federal jury that convicted him of drug smuggling in 1983 was controlled by the CIA, Petit told the Herald. Defense attorney Hamilton is convinced that Petit is linked to the agency. I'll tell you this, she says. Jim Petit has worked for CIA. That has been confirmed. Petit has told me he worked for CIA. In addition, Charles Marty has told me he worked for CIA. That has had Petit checked out. That it was confirmed. Marty, a co-defendant in a federal drug case, was to have been a co-pilot on a drug flight with Petit. In the middle of that trial, Marty's defense attorney, Alexander Martoni, asked for a hearing out of the presence of the jurors because he had learned that Marty had met secretly with DEA and CIA. CIA tried to get the charges dismissed because of the CIA connection with my client, Martoni told the U.S. District Judge Jose Gonzalez. There are letters in the files. I have direct confirmation that Jim Petit has flown for CIA, said Martoni. Jim Petit needs some definite help. The government owes him that. He's been impaired as a result of those flights. The U.S. government has never taken responsibility for what happened to Jim Petit. Before Petit's federal trial, defense attorney Hamilton asked Gonzalez to order a psychiatric test and a CAT scan of Petit's head. Dr. Charles Mutter reported that Petit was competent to stand trial, according to the Herald, and added this, quote, "It is my opinion that this individual is attempting to contrive a story in order to evade further legal proceedings. Although his alleged belief would represent a psychotic delusion, there's something else in the mental status of the man that is consistent with mental illness." The CAT scan at Jackson Memorial found nothing. Petit didn't testify. He refused to cooperate with Hamilton. The attorney said nothing about CIA or implants. The jury convicted Petit. Gonzalez ordered a 15-year prison sentence, one of the stiffest in the Operation Screamer cases. Petit's extensive criminal record. He had several prison terms, prompted the judge to order the tough sentence, Hamilton says. Now Petit awaits trial in circuit court, accused of setting fire to his girlfriend's house after barricading himself inside after DEA agent Beasley tried to arrest him. The case was scheduled for trial before Judge Gross last week. The day the trial was to begin, hospital officials, responding to a court order, brought copies of the federally ordered x-rays to court. Petit, defense attorney Gerger, and prosecutor Phil Mentally huddled in the jury room with Dr. Roderick M. Quenzer of Jackson's radiology department to examine the x-rays. The x-rays showed the top of Petit's head, but didn't show the neck area behind his ear. Petit, who is representing himself with Gober as co-counsel, offered to plea no contest to the arson charge and accept a 30-year sentence if another set of x-rays showed nothing. Judge Gross sent Petit back to the hospital. When Dr. Quenzer returned with the newest test, he told the judge that something unexplainable is in Petit's neck. I thought he was just fabricating a story to beat the charges, said Gross. The x-rays give me something to think about. Until the radiologist came in, I thought it was nonsense, said Minotti. I don't know what those things are. The radiologist said it could be metal from an accident, but it certainly would be worth checking into. But it has nothing to do with this case. Tuesday, Gross ordered the hospital staff to perform an operation to determine what is in Petit's neck. A follow-up story written by Bill Looney appeared on June 19, 1984, in the Miami Herald headlined, X-ray surgery failed to find bug in man. The first CIA operation in Jackson Memorial history ended in disappointment Friday for James Petit. It was just after 10 a.m. when Petit, age 38, convicted of drug pilot, accused arsonist, and firm believer that the CIA had planted electronic thought control devices in his skull, rolled into Ward D at Jackson in a wheelchair and leg irons. He was clutching a court order for the surgery that would prove his claim, ease his mind, and maybe cut out prison time. "I'm not going to let them put me to sleep," he said wearily. "Jackson's a damn government hospital." He needed have worried. After reviewing new x-rays taken Friday, the Jackson's physician scheduled to do exploratory surgery and find out just what was in Petit's head and refused to operate above the neck. "I'm not touching that head," said Jackson Professor Surgery Geraldo Gomez. "I want those things that look like bottles taken out of my head." Any refusal of Jackson Memorial Hospital to follow this court order constitutes, in my opinion, collusion with CIA, said Petit, holding the folded order from Circuit Judge Howard Gross as senior surgical resident Michael Kotler sewed up his back. "Tell me, doctor, do you work for CIA?" "What are you talking about?" Gomez said, laughing uneasily and looking confused. "I don't work for the government. I want it known that the doctors at Jackson Memorial Hospital refused to operate on the suspicious area," Petit said. "Mr. Petit wants the court order enforced," Gober said. He said they would try again in court. "Since I took this case, I've had 7 people come to the office asking if I can help them with similar problems," Gober said. "One said she was John Kennedy's girlfriend and the FBI had put transmitters in her head so she wouldn't get JFK into trouble. Everybody wants to know what those things are in Petit's head." "Are we witnessing the manifestation of a new cyborg mythology, a form of cybernetic hallucination which is building toward an eruption from the collective unconscious? Or is the day Dr. Jose Delgado was desiring already at hand? Maybe we already live in a psycho-civilized society that Dr. Delgado called for in his testimony before a congressman committee when he said the following, quote, "We need a program of psycho-surgery for political control of our society. The purpose is physical control of the mind. Everyone who deviates from the governed norm can be surgically mutilated. The individual may think that the most important reality is his own experience, but this is only his personal point of view. This lacks historical perspective. Man does not have the right to develop his own mind. This kind of liberal orientation has great appeal. We must electronically control the brain. Someday, armies and generals will be controlled by electronic stimulation of the brain. And remember, that was the state through the Public Health Service, the Office of Naval Research, and the U.S. Air Force Aeromedical Research Laboratory, which funded Delgado's work. The golden tone of David Emery's voice made a series of tapes called Operation Mind Control. Emery recapped the early version of the book, presenting an easy listening way of covering the highlights of the history. Emery and his staff also came up with some good original research. But above all, they broadcast the shows live and took calls from the most well-informed audience of regular listeners in California. On Emery's Operation Mind Control No. 5, Tape 2C, a caller says, "Keep up this very good work. It is very important. When you get down to it, then the basis of controlling society, if you get to people's minds, the rest is easy." Emery, "California is the center of this type of activity, and when Ronald Reagan was governor, he attempted to get something. The Institute for the Study of Violent Behavior set up in Southern California. People involved were Lois John West. He was Jack Ruby's psychiatrist. He testifies that Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald because he had psychometer epilepsy, and he had a brief epileptic episode which caused him to pull the trigger and kill Oswald with a single shot. And that is the Warren Commission's thesis as to why Ruby killed Oswald. Also, Dr. Earl Bryan, a key official under Governor Reagan, he was involved in a massive use of behavior modification techniques in the California prison system, which was used under Reagan as a huge laboratory for the development and refinement of all types of mind control techniques. But Earl Bryan was also connected with Edwin Meese, and his name surfaced prominently with the scandals that our Attorney General was connected with some type of things in months back. Another caller says, "It's also good to keep in mind that the 6th anniversary of Jonestown is coming up. It was a CIA mind control experiment with very serious and fatal consequences. The big secret would appear to have gotten out. Mind control is part of a surge of invisible weaponry development. Our elected officials must be involved. A third of our national budget is spent on black operations which hide all the secrets. Still, thankfully, the information is getting out to the general public, and since 1980, it's been like the survivors of EM targeting, the Harlan Gurren, who have led the way." So, it's appropriate to close this chapter with the voice of Girard from his speech entitled "Effects of Gigahertz Radiation on the Human Nervous System: Recent Developments in the Technology of Political Control," a speech he delivered at the NATO Advanced Research Workshop on Coherent and Emergent Phenomena and Biomolecular Systems, held at the University of Arizona, January 15th and 19th, 1991. Quote, "In 1988, the Office of Technology Assessment of the Congress of the United States published a special report entitled Criminal Justice, the New Technologies, and the Constitution. The report surveys the new technologies used in investigation, apprehension, and confinement of criminals, and addresses the delicate balance to be maintained between the national interest and individual rights. As welcome as this report is those of us who are interested in the government of law rather than of men, it manages to omit any discussions of the use of directed energy weapons from the section on less than lethal weapons. For instance, a weapon has been developed to paralyze a person at a distance through a brick wall if necessary. This weapon was developed during 1983 and 84 for use in situations where hostages are being held. A variation of this weapon has been purchased by the Marine Corps for confusing and disorientating the enemy. American weapons research has centered on pulse radiation in the gigahertz frequency band for a very interested reason. In 1972, the Department of the Army researched Soviets and other foreign literature sources and discovered over 500 studies devoted to the biological effects of super high frequency electromagnetic oscillations. SHF may have potential uses as a technique for altering human behavior. Lethal and non-lethal aspects has been shown to exist. In certain non-lethal exposures, definitive behavioral changes have occurred. There also appears to be change in mammals which were exposed to SHF and sensitivity to sound, light, and olfactory stimuli. The significance of these intelligence documents in terms of medical experiments commissioned by the CIA since 1976 is that emphasis in this report is placed on influencing individuals as opposed to groups. Secondly, this report is a trend study and therefore contains statements predicting Soviet knowledge and capabilities for influencing human behavior up to 15 years ahead, or 1987. It foreshadows the enormous effort put in behavior control experiments, employing the use of lasers and microwave beam weapons on involuntary human subjects during the Reagan-Bush regime. Thirdly, despite the report titled Controlled Offensive Despite USSR, it opens up with a chapter describing the use of torture on Catholic prisoners in British jails in Northern Ireland. The inclusion of the chapter at all and its position at the front of the report clearly is intended to suggest that it is permissible for the United States to torture its its own citizens because these methods are being used by our very civilized cousins in Britain, and not only barbarians in the Soviet Union. Fourthly, the report states that the purpose of mind-altering techniques is to create one or more several different possible states in the conscious or unconscious area of the brain. The ultimate goal of controlled offensive behavior might be well that the total submission of one's will to some outside force. After discussion of the possible states short of complete submission, which may be the goal of Soviet research and behavioral control, the author states, "Since the desired end product of this type of research is some change in the human mind, only the non-lethal aspects are discussed in this report. It should be remembered, however, that some techniques have lethal thresholds." In the current round of American behavior control experiments, no allowance is made for legal thresholds. The use of involuntary human subjects provided by CIA precludes the necessity of the researchers to consider the lethal thresholds and legal countermeasures. A curious situation has emerged in which torturers and murderers attend our meetings, address us on the failings of our own research, and misdirect us with papers on benign effects of incubating eggs in 60 kHz magnetic fields in order to buy time for their own well-paid and frequently lethal experiments on involuntary human subjects. Of particular interest, in light of current developments, are two paragraphs in the very last chapter which concern a Boston-based CIA front organization, the Scientific Engineering Institute, which still exists, not so incidentally. The SEI, which initially established to do research on radar in the 1960s, the SEI added a wing devoted to life sciences and hired a group of behavioral and medical scientists. Lastly, I would like to cite another Defense Intelligence Agency report, also prepared by the U.S. Army. It's titled, "Biological Effects of Electromagnetic Radiation, Radio, Microwaves, Eurasian Communist Countries." It was published by the Defense Intelligence Agency in March of 1976. The importance of this report rests not on its content, much of which seems to remain classified, but it's an acknowledgement of a shift in focus less than 4 years from a wide range of behavior control interest to just one, electromagnetic radiation. The date of this report is also significant. It was published just as George Herbert Walker Bush became director of CIA. Experiments on involuntary human subjects were rapidly authorized by the new director, but outside of the United States because of the wrath of Congress at the time. One experiment was begun in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, under the aegis of an American oil company, which was the DCI, on a friendly terms. It consisted initially of blasting a man's brain with a microwave analog of sound waves for 2 to 3 hours a day. It had the effect of producing auditory hallucinations. Gerard continued, "A further discussion of events leading up to the present series of mind control experiments will have to wait another occasion in favor of a discussion of the technology of which the United States is now possessed. As I have already indicated, one of the principal features of the weapon system is its ability to produce auditory effects or hallucinations. Using this effects to broadcast defeat into the minds of the enemy was a particular dream of Leonard Peru's of the U.S. Air Force. He hired droves of consultants to tell him how to use a microwave beam to implant ideas in the mind of the enemy and, to be perfectly fair, to urge on his own troops to hubernemian deeds of valor. Instead, Peru's turned into a man who promised him results. This man remembered the microwave analog audiograms used by Dr. Joseph Sharp to beam auditory hallucinations into his own head at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research in 1973. He promised Peruse that he could talk to a human being to death if furnished with the equipment Sharp had used at Walter Reed, a slave and personal security. This was the origin of the medical atrocities which began in Edmonton, Alberta in 1976 under the protection of CIA, and which continues to this day. By the fall of 1983,
Experiments had produced some communication equipment which far exceeded the simple dream of broadcasting defeat into the minds of the enemy. It is not only capable of producing auditory hallucinations, but visual hallucinations as well. The visual hallucinations have been described to me by a German artist on whom his equipment is being used involuntarily as having the quality of 35mm color slides. Besides these sensory hallucinations, the same equipment can be used to block all sensations. It is being used to distort and even to completely block all senses. With it, ultimate and sensory deprivation experiments can be performed. There is no peeking under the electromagnetic blindfold this equipment creates. I should mention in this context that CIA now has a mention at its disposal the most evil, most cunning torture devised by any government in all human history. It is truly satanic in its moral or ethical implications. It is a torture which is commensurate with the degeneracy of a nation which is prepared and well on its way to polluting all life on Earth into extinction. The torture I am writing of is, I can describe as thought deprivation. It is used in conjunction with sensory deprivation, but is in fact sensory deprivation 10 times to the 10th power. We're all familiar with the sensation of being exposed to very loud noises. They're irritating and we try to remove ourselves from them. We might say, it's so noisy in here, I just can't hear myself think. Human beings perceive thought as audible sound. It is something which we hear. We listen to ourselves think. This quality of listening to ourselves think, of hearing our own thoughts, can be extinguished by this device so that it is not possible to hear oneself think. I have no idea how this effect is produced. It may be accomplished by playing a signal into the auditory nerve at such a high power that it does in fact drown out all the sound of thought, but I do not believe this is how this is being done. I do not know enough about the physiology of the brain to explain how it might be done, but CIA can do it with mind control technology at its disposal. That is bad news. The good news is one continues to think even if one cannot hear oneself think. Do not panic. There is nothing to fear. On the other hand, our thought process is the thing that distinguishes man from the other forms of life. Where does this leave us at the sum? It means I think, therefore I am. But you can no longer think, are you? Furthermore, this communications equipment is able to produce pain, enormous amounts of pain. Pain is only another nerve signal, and pain is applied in great quantities in the torture regimen. Sometimes the pain is specific and describable. More often it is a general and indescribable. It is very much like being immersed in water, only it isn't water, it is pain. The pain surges and lapses at one like water. I've also described this pain as being very much like having an electronic current passing through one.